Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hamid, the CEO for American Muslims 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum. And welcome to another edition of Solution to Critical Issues, here where we look at the issues of today that affects our lives and we work on solutions to these issues. Today we have an interesting topic, the power of persuasive words, the enormous empowerment of word power. So we're going to be looking at this subject. As we know, words make people. Words don't mean, people mean and give meaning to these words. So at this time, we're going to bring in Dr. Jamal Rashid. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Jamal.
Wa alaikum assalam, Brother Henry. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa tahu la sharika la. وَأَشْهَدُ أَنَّ مُحَمَّدًا عَبْدُهُ وَرَسُولُهُ. Brothers and sisters in the American Muslim 360 Block Radio listening audience, we greet you with the greetings of peace of Assalamu Alaikum. You know, the power of persuasive words and review and definition are words. that bring messages into our five senses. That is the basic foundation for the definition, in definition, fear of the Imam Muhammad Rahim Allah Alayh, who states that we have to, each and every word that enters our mind through one or more of our five senses. For example, when we eat the food, it goes through our sense, or what we call our taste buds. It brings a message whether or not to add an ingredient to this substance or creation called food that we have defined as food. You see, all these detailed things in our mind simultaneously or coherently every second, and we don't even be paying attention. But these transformations be going on whether we are conscious or not. That's amazing. And all the, what we may call subliminal decisions that are being made on our behalf, and we may not even, in fact, we're not even aware of all these transformations going on. I mean, the operations of the human being is phenomenal. And if the operations of us are phenomenal, can you imagine other parts of creation that are simultaneously going on at the same time? To keep things that we take for granted operational? Amazing. And all the transactions, that is, things that exist that are operating at the same time for various reasons. And yet we witness harmony and oneness all the time. What an amazing operation. Think that the computers are sensational. We just observe what's going on in our very existence as a created being on this magnificent earth. And what we have been blessed to say in this few seconds is nothing, the unlimited operations that coexist as we speak. It just gives you a glimpse of the enormous power of Allah. That's what that is relaying, and those are just a few words. And it goes back to the definition of words being messages to our mind when we reflect on what I just stated in a few seconds. Amazing. It's one word that has the tremendous power to just go all over the earth and giving insights on what's occurring at this very moment, or since the very moment we opened the program. Yes, a reflection. Unlimited creations that are coexisting on this fabulous creation we call Earth. Very small entity, if you will, on this magnificent universe. just a little sidebar with our topic about persuasive words, the impact of persuasive words. You know, this earth really is operational from its onset. Onset meaning its beginning as we know it. The history of this magnificent universe basically centered around sound bites in the beginning. It's a sound bite because there is a natural follow-up on in the beginning. We have been, as we might say, polarized or hypnotized or given when we may consider information that goes following that statement in the beginning. There's a continuation that we automatically know in the beginning. And we generally have a similar concept about what occurs in the beginning. Some may say it was the creation of the heavens and the earth. The sound bite. As we know, the earth, the beginning, it started good. The beginning is good. Whatever defines good or positive was the first word or the first statement we have basically understood in the beginning. And so we know that Imam Muhammad was blessed to really rewrite or transform some powerful information that he is definitely qualified as a reformer. It's one of the titles that he carries, a reformer of the past. That's a heavy title to be given to what the world has described as a lost found, one that was lost, meaning the history of the African diaspora. The beginning was that in dire straits. So when we speak of he singular, speaking of Imam Muhammad, we're referring to a people that he is seeded from as lost and found. Not talking about the individual, but the responsibility and the meaning of what he was blessed. You have to say, that doesn't come ordinarily. No, it doesn't. To one individual. This has to be the work of Allah, giving some light on Imam Muhammad's role, partial role, as it relates to you and I. Just to give a reflection on persuasive words is our topic for those of you who are still steadily tuning in. Power of persuasive words. Ensuring the significance of Imam Muhammad being superbly blessed. And we're emphasizing the way the words are coming out my mouth. But we don't take this lightly. No. Whatever no means, whatever no means, you can't take it lightly. As far as the impact of Imam Muhammad's message to the world. You can see why he was called a human, what? Salvation. You understand? A little more. Salvation. Was way beyond what we consider an enslaved African born in America. You know, Allah just put on my soul to go in the direction that I've gone. But it wasn't planned for me to expand these few minutes. Just giving some credence or a recognition of Imam Muhammad's role as human salvation. You know, you can spend weeks and still wouldn't be complete in describing the significance of the sound bites that he was blessed to, as they say, flip it. What does flip it mean in definition? The flip, actually, the plans of what we call evildoers that we can't take lightly. Because in the beginning was good. You recall me saying that? In the beginning was good. Where immediately the evildoers tried to flip it. And not tried, they did flip it. For example, the Quran says we were born in excellence. The evildoers said we were born in what? You see what I'm saying? Damn it, that ain't no, this is no lightweight matter. Some evildoers. I like to refer to these beasts as evildoers. Because they did things that were un-Islamic to justify some of their characteristics. Evildoers. Doers of evil, inhumane evil, some light. See, I could just rattle and talk and ooh and soothe the soul, but I'm trying to talk to sober-minded individuals this morning so that the message is clear about persuasive words. You know, we have to thank the culture of what's actually occurring, has occurred since the unexpected election of President Barack Obama. Immediately, or even during the first day or two, even before the inauguration of President Barack Obama, the evildoers were already plotting to undo or stagnate or to flip any script President Barack Obama was intending to install. You know, those of you who like to read stories or watch stories, this is a magnificent story I'm actually portraying. A magnificent story. I'm not really described as a storyteller, but I have become that. And a very clear storyteller. But trying to put my audience in the same frame of insight that I'm currently in. That's what we call sharing information as I see it. As some reports may say, from the death of doctor, speaking in the doctor's seat. You're hearing a doctor of sociology speaking that's going rooted in the cause of effects. This is one of my highlights. What I've been blessed to share, magnificent. We're talking about one-worders. You know, we're talking about the attributes of Allah. But in words make people, we also see an additional soundbite theater of information shared from its, as we know it, onset. You see how I just don't haphazardly say words without trying to put us in the right setting. You know, if you go to a Omnimax theater, you know, there's various outlets for different appearances that is currently going on in that of the movie theater. Amazing. Imam Muhammad was blessed to come up with the word a new mind. We're talking about a persuasive word. And you see, when words are shared, what you can define or distinguish a word or words plural that are more substantial than others, initial words are immediate self-gratification. I think I hit the mute button for a second. That which immediate self-gratifications are that which enables us to feel, think, and act. You see how that transpires and what's happening? Immediate self-gratification, that which immediately soothes our souls to feel good, just to bring us right down to the nitty-gritty, as we say in the hood. You know, we are beautiful people. I mean, real beauty, not to hurt other people. That's not what we do. That's what we try not to do. You know, we try not to be an evil doer to others. We're trying to represent the best that humanity can resent. Amazing. I can't compare the English language to other languages, but, you know, a lot of words, how they are formulated, it's pretty magnificent. You're trying to find a descriptive word. And so, you know, I've only covered maybe one or two or three or four persuasive words in some few minutes to give us some pointers of how important or how impactful words are as bringing the initial foundation to an entire world for generations. Just a few words, sound bite, covers history. Billions of people. But we're not talking about a small matter here. You see? We're not talking about some chump change on how this evolves, the way it evolves, magnificent. And those of you who are online listening and have the patience to hear, and I'm saying that very, very lightly, but also importantly, you are blessed because of the words that I know have a thoughtful meaning of what's being shared. So, Brother Henry, I'm going to yield at this time, because I could talk 4 hours on just, and it seems like we have a very patient audience. I only covered a few persuasive words on what a book could be written just on what I'm talking about easily.
Right. Well, we're going to take station break here for PSA, and then we'll be right back. And we would invite our listeners, if you do have a question or comment, do press 1 on your phone, and we'll be right back after this brief PSA.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
Okay, we're back here on Critical Issues, where we are talking about the power of words and how they affect the human being. And a couple of things that came to mind, Dr. Rashid.
Brother Henry, you left out one word, power of words. I want you to add, if you can, back in that word, persuasive.
Persuasive, right. Yes, the persuasive words. But, you know, Dr. Rashid, you know, Imam Muhammad came up with the phrase, words make people. And, you know, I think a lot of times when we just say that, people may not get the full effect of what how words make people there, because everything look like basically in this society is taught just on a physical level. Most people never get out of the physical into really examining the intellect and other thing, or as I say, the real human being, which is inside of this physical body. So we are affected by words, but we never really examine the effects of how these words make us. Today, and I remember there was a song by a group, an Islamic group called Remote Control. And it looks like they have us on remote control because they just feed us words, as you mentioned earlier, some words without us even being aware that we're being fed these words. And they see how words affect the human being, and we're being affected by these words, and we don't even know what the cause of the effect that is happening to us.
I want to add, while you're speaking, so we don't lose this point, you know, the receptors, we are the receivers of each and every word. And every word that's spoken, you know, a synonym is probably the closest word that I can describe at this point. Synonyms. If you hear one word, it means similar, or similar has similar meanings. Right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So every time a person speaks, it is being translated individually as many different meanings that one word, as we know it, can comprise of. It's just to show how we are very small and magnificent when you just said how words impact our thoughts, our feelings, and the correct order is our feelings, then thoughts, then our intellect, or it combines into the intellect, but it constantly evolves, you know, it multiplies unlimitedly, you know, just how words, you know, just the Arabic language as we know it, the tiny bit that we do know, how words can mean so many different meanings. The same word can just constantly evolve and grow.
Right.
It's not limited like the English language is. You see?
Right.
So
exactly.
We're looking at persuasive words, you know, our little mind, and not calling ourselves in a degrading way, but our small, I don't want to limit us because we are greater than what I can say. But our minds have the capacity to grow and not be contained at all. And each and every one of us have reservoirs to store information. You know, that in itself is a lot on our vocabulary. You know, that's just one word to say. You have a vocabulary that is substantial, you know, meaning you have a reservoir or a vault or a depository, you know, just trying to search for more words that can go into the container that we call the human mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you were saying, synonyms, and then they come up with the word antonym. They got the opposite and the similar, so they come up with a lot. You know, when you take a word, any word there, and usually when you look it up, you can usually find a synonym, as they call it, or a antonym. to that word. And usually in the synonym stage that you was talking about earlier, even the word has got synonyms. You know, you when you would look up the a synonym for word, as I did, it says conversation, talk, chat, chit chat. And, you know, it goes down and down and down. So some of the words that's not more frequently used for that synonym, that they would even give those words also. But we don't examine enough from the intellect that I believe that we basically stay on a physical level, and we need to go on a higher level to really see how we're being controlled, as I say, remote control, because people are controlling us by words, and we're not even aware that we're being controlled. And when you're not being aware of your how you being controlled or how you being manipulated, some even call it how you being hypnotized, how you being hypnotized under the hypnotism of these words, because we don't understand the power of these persuasive words. And I've seen people be persuaded by words. They think one way one way this day, but you wonder why they change. And it doesn't usually happen just graphically. It usually happens over time. And, you know, most of us can relate to that. Words was making us, and then we got a better understanding of the words. And then there was some other persuasive words that led us in a whole different direction. People wonder that, you know, they asked us, and I know we all get these questions, how did you become a Muslim? They want to know, how did you break out of these words that you were entrapped in that was controlling you? How did you break that? How did you escape, I think, sometimes from those words to get knowledge, other words that persuaded you to go in a different direction. I just wanted to add that to this conversation to give us something to think about.
Absolutely. You know, those of you just tuning in, you know, our topic this morning is the power of persuasive words to show how the origin, as we know it, notice how I try to keep emphasizing, as we know it, is magnificent. And just to piggyback on the piggyback is to recognize the power of synonyms. You know, that is why increasing our vocabulary is a basic terminology that we should be used to for hearing it for decades. Why it's important to increase our vocabulary. But we as African Americans, lost in the African diaspora, were forced not to learn. You know, we emphasize in academic intelligence, by the way, the importance of it. But we were, as you used the word several times, controlled, and not being aware of the controlness, to not want to learn. Learning got us in what we call or describe as in trouble. Isn't that something? How our enslavers recognized the power of information, the power of knowledge. And so we have been programmed systematically, a system, to not want to learn. You know, and at the same time, to substitute where our values should be on learning, our values have been flipped to nonsense. And you know the word nonsense. No sense. Doesn't make any sense. And that's popular, is to be dumb, just to bottom line it, the headline it, and, you know, just the word headline, a headliner is to be in the orbit, you know, orbit of nonsense. You know, so no. If people can understand what I'm just saying in these few words, then you can see why we can't get out of the balance box. There's no first base in the race towards human productivity, you know? And, you know, people of higher learning, they are learning, they're taking notes, heavy notes from what we, as what they call the lost found, the death dump, lost and found, they are taking notes on re-educating themselves. Just to show you how powerful we are, leveled out to be. And just to give me a pat on the back, you can see Imam Muhammad recognized my intellectual capacity since the 1990s. And that's far back as I can recall, because I know that's when I start being known to his ear. He's talking about Imam Muhammad's ear. That's a pat on the back to me. And so when we say that, we be humble again, because I can blow my mind getting too arrogant. You know, some people may say arrogant. You know, so I say all of that with humbleness and gratitude and just how one person that the world has known as representing the enslaved masters of the plantation. Isn't that something? So again, we have all listeners with the ear to hear, which is good, because we have been given thoughtful insights on very deep information this morning. With most people nodding or still asleep, and sleeper in various levels of what we call sleep, which is deep sleep. And then the power of the human is that you can't reach everybody. Like everybody's not in the same mindset at all. But, you know, the reason how I can relate that is, and how we can relate it, is that we know there's a classroom full of students, but everybody in that classroom are not on the same level. That's easy to understand. Everybody in the third grade is not in the third grade level. And likewise, in societal classroom, a society of classroom, everybody is not on the same wavelength or mindset repeatedly. Everybody's not on the same wavelength. So that's very powerful. You all have to pat yourself on the back for being attentive listeners. Blessed he who got an ear to hear. It's a reward in itself. So don't take yourself lightly for being able to patiently listen, listening. I want to be glad Brother Mark would take my hint that I've been saying, don't wait on a certain criteria to get your book or wordology. And I say book, but audio book is one of the top sellers in a non-reading world. A non-reader's world That's why audio books have become so popularized. It's because not only do African Americans have a problem of reading, but it is a systemic disease amongst the world intentionally by the evildoers. Is not want people, they want them to be read, but read, they want to feed them or force feed the world on what they want the world to know. Now, you can imagine all the notes that was taken just from that one sentence I just said. All the note takers. All the subscribers. Because we don't take what we're blessed with very lightly at all. That small audience, but you know what that coincides with? The world, I had a learning class that I couldn't stand when I was getting my master's degree in sociology. But the one class I did not like I couldn't stand it, was to learn about the so-called sociologists, the great sociologists that the world described as the great sociologists. But the one thing that they had in common was they all had small audiences. That translates into a tremendous meaning that I'm sharing. That the one thing the so-called great sociologists of the world had in common was they all had small audiences. Otherwise, it wasn't popular at all. It wasn't shake your booty one more time audience. You know what I'm saying? You know, I watch Judge Judy from time to time, and she's a good example of showing how people of various backgrounds are at disadvantages. Because sometimes some of her people that come to her court, she don't understand the slang language that they are talking about. So she has to turn to the brother who's the policeman in her court, she has to turn to him immediately for transcription. But what was he has to be a describer for her. But that shows they want to call us ignorant in certain things like Jeopardy, the game show Jeopardy. But we're just, and some of you may not be aware of what they call cultural bias. I'm going to say it for a third time. Cultural bias, it puts people from different cultures at a disadvantage. That's what cultural bias means. What they call standardized testing is culturally biased. And so it puts African Americans at a disadvantage. We're not stupid. It's just that the things that they deem as important information is not in our curriculum as a culture. Just like what is popular or what is culturally impactful in our hood. You know, you'd be surprised the number of people out there, what did he just say? They have to be searching for a transcriber just to transcribe or try to figure out what is it I just said. Many people from different cultures wouldn't understand my slang, if you will, brothers in the hood. When I say brothers, we're talking about brothers and sisters in the hood. Again, if anybody have his last minute question or comment on persuasive word, please, not like we're begging, but press 1 and we can entertain your thought. at this point in time. If not, Brother Henry, we can go to our another PSA real quickly before we sign off.
Okay, well, we'll do that, and we'll have about 10 minutes into the program here, but we'll be right back after this brief break here. We'll be right back.
Oh, I want to say something about Sister Martha, if I can remember. The Chief Professional Report.
This is Sabrita Hadi, Director of the MCNRD Model Community National Resource Directory, reminding volunteers of our upcoming MCNRD Social Connect Conference every last Sunday of the month, 1 o'clock p.m. to 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We look forward to your participation, so please check your email for conference call information. Thank you so kindly. Assalamu alaikum.
There's a place where words make people, a place where you're invited to expand your heart and mind. There's a place where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. You're listening to the American Muslim 360 Radio Network, 24/7, Muslim hosted, from religion and current world events, politics, faith and education, marriage and health, music and arts, physical fitness and more. Join AM360. Where we're helping to build a model community every day. It's a place where you can help remake the world.
Okay, all right, we are back. Dr. Rashid, the comment that you wanted to make before we took
about
the break.
Sister Martha, yes. Mm-hmm. I wanted to state, if those of you recall Sister Martha's PSA, and that, you know, she is very good, a very good professional newscaster. You know, she's among the top newscasters in the world. You know, just on her insight on how she delivers PSA. Or information that she shares, you know, we are blessed to have one of the top professional newscasters to give it her some credence. And what we have right here on American Muslim 360, you know, hey, Ma'am Adam, I see that I neglected to give you a topic. I thought of it last night and didn't get it to you. You know, something that comes through your mind that distracts you. But I did give you a topic. So if you can put it in our format, even though we've already covered it, at least, you know, we have the majority of our audiences listening in later so they will know the topic. This morning was the power of persuasive words. I did text you that early this morning before we went on the air. So I say, Ma'am Adam, if you can do that, sir. Okay, so we're winding down, and we're not winding down.
All right. What I wanted to add to the conversation here is that besides words, words should cause us to think. You know, we just getting words, and we don't think about the words or the meaning to know what the meaning of that word is through the process of thinking, then, you know,
quick while you're in that thought? Words do cause us to think, but it causes us to think about the detrimental things.
That's one of the persuasive things that is happening.
If I can just cut you off, I hate doing that. But a lot of times we take stuff for granted, and I've learned to almost make sure my audience is on the same page I'm on, the wavelength that I'm on as I talk. I mean, that's the professional teacherism, if you will, that I've learned to become over years of being a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and one of the reasons I said that, because there's a surah in the Quran that talks about the thinking man and the thinking woman. It says, and it repeats it over and over again, the thinking man, the thinking woman. And then they got what they call dead letters or dead words that when people hear them, they give no thought to these words at all. They just either accept them or repeat them. But if you ask them the meaning or ask them what they get out of it, it's they don't get anything. For example, when I ask the person, I say, would you define human being for me? A lot of people just go blank. They have no idea what the word human being is. Now, if you tell them, say, well, would you describe man or woman, they'll give some of the physical features of that. But that's as far as it goes. And that's what I mean by a lot of times when we get words, we only look at them just on the physical level, and we don't even attempt to take them to another intellectual level there. So we got a lot of work to do on words and how they persuade us to do things that sometimes we're not even, a lot of times now we're not even aware of. And because they do that, they look like this society is now being put on remote control. Exactly. I remember that from one of the artists in the community wrote a song called Remote Control. And in the song, it shows how we just like a robot, because they got us on remote control, and we are not thinking before we act. And when we look out here in the society, some of the things that's being done, especially some of the crime and stuff, you know, the folks really didn't give no thought to it, as though, you know, they are a robot and don't have no feelings or anything for these things.
I'm going to describe it because we've run out of time, is that that's what part of what they call systemic ignorance. I just made up a word, but the word is impactful to our meaning. Systemic ignorance. You know, it's in the umbrella, same umbrella as systemic racism, anything that's a system. But this here has to be systemic ignorance or systemic stupidity. And that's why the great Martin Luther King stated in his book, from strength to love, that two of the most dangerous things in all the world, sincere ignorance and conscientiously stupid, dangerous. And it goes along with our topic, persuasive words. So we need to sign off at this point. We'll get ready for Imam Adam Biak Money Sense, and I see that his topic is dealing with conspiracy theory. That should be very interesting. So stay tuned. Don't drop that phone.
All right, and we'll see you next week at the same time here on Thursday morning for another edition of Critical Issues. Assalamu alaikum.
There's a place where words make people, a place where you're invited to expand your heart and mind. There's a place where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. You're listening to the American Muslim 360 Radio Network, 24/7, Muslim hosted, from religion and current world events, politics, faith and education, marriage and health, music and arts, physical fitness and more. Join AM360. Where we're helping to build a model community every day. It's a place where you can help remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum, rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is Adam B. out here on Money Sense, here on AM 360 on this Thursday morning, August the 3rd. I want to begin by reading an excerpt from the Quran. And just a minute, I had it, then I lost it. Okay, here it is. This is from Surah Al-Anfal, the 8th surah of the Quran, and the 30th ayah. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa iz yamkuru bika allazina kafaru liyutbi'uka aw yaqtuluka aw yajruk wa yamkuruna wa yamkurula. وَلَهُ كَيْرُ مَاكِرِينَ صَدَقَ اللَّهُ الْعَظِيمُ. In the translation, remember how the unbelievers plotted against thee to keep thee in bonds or slay thee or get thee out of thy home. They plot and plan, and Allah too plans. But the best of planners is Allah. Sadaqallahu adeem. Allah speaks through truth, and surely Allah's words are true. I want to welcome all of you to our program, those that are remained over from the previous program with Dr. Jamal Rashid. And you know, they talked about the power of persuasive words. And we're going to vary that a little bit right now. We're going to continue on with our discussion today. And today we want to discuss conspiracy theories. Conspiracy theories. And I doubt for many of us that a day doesn't go by where we aren't hit with through our friends or people we discuss some idea or concept of conspiracies. I remember one time when we had our bookstore here and we would sell books on, I mean, we sold a lot of books, and not necessarily say it was something we agreed in, but one book we sold was on the Illuminati, because we found that there was an appetite on there for them for some of our customers, that they wanted to learn about the deep conspiracies. And we figured if we get them in the store, we had a lot of Islamic literature, Qurans, books by Imam Muhammad, Muslim Journal, and things of that nature. So it was, to us, a good dawah piece, and alhamdulillah, we were able to win over people. I had a young man call me from, I didn't remember him, you know, you get to the age, you don't remember everybody. But he called me on the phone, and he ran across my number. He wanted to make sure it was still the same number. And he called me and gave me his name, and I said, but I don't remember you. So he made me remember him. He had been gone from Fayetteville since 2000. And he said, I used to come by our store. And he's Muslim now. I said, alhamdulillah. That's good. So not saying that we had a hand in that, but it was a process. And we felt we we helped and aided the process. So anyway, as I said, we sold books. Like one of the books, I remember the Illuminati Cousins. One brother used to come in every week, and he would either browse through the store or he would buy some books. And one day he came into our store. He came in like somebody was following him. Paranoid. And he kept talking about the Illuminati. They're following him. And I felt responsible for that. Now, I talked about the one where the brother became a Muslim. And then the next one, the brother flipped out. And I felt responsible for that because he bought the book, the Illuminati, from me. Anyway, I'm just showing you how conspiracies, and really, really, conspiracies have been around for a long time, not just something new. And what brought this back, I was getting my hair cut yesterday. And my barber had just got back from vacation. And he said, did you hear about LeBron's son? I said, yeah, I heard about LeBron's son. He had a cardiac arrest. And he said, he just got back. He just found out about it. I said, yeah, it's kind of a sad thing. I said, I hope the brother's all right. Then he said, do you think it was the jab? Do I think it was the jab? I said, no, I wouldn't say that. And he subscribed to the theory that the jab, y'all know what the jab is, right? Like the COVID vaccination, called it the jab. And he was saying how the jab was designed to kill us. Some of us. Hey, well, brother, I don't know about that. I know the COVID was killing us. And in my estimation, more COVID killed us than the jab. You know, but that was his subscribing to a conspiracy thing, right? And I didn't press him too much because I don't know, you know. The last time I ran across a conspiracy guy, he had flipped out, and this man's cutting my hair. So I don't want to press him too much. You know what I mean? Not while he's over my head. But I said, think about it. How many of our people died of COVID-19? There was a lot of them died. And how many people do you know that died of the jab? Now, let's be real. The scientists that were developing the vaccine, they were under pressure to rush it into use. And a couple of companies that came up with what they felt was a solution, their vaccine got rejected because they didn't do enough study on it. And it was amazing that they found any kind of successful vaccine with the time frame they had. So I'm sure in the development of it, the scientists and the government, the National Institute of Health, and all the other government agencies that were weighing in, the CDC, I'm sure that they came up with an acceptable result. And while we were talking, he had a TV on, and on the TV, there was a commercial about some prescriptive drug that they were touting. And that, well, they were talking about does all this, and then at the end of the commercial, the commentator rushed to some of the side effects. I said, look at that. They develop that, and they're trying to sell it, but they tell you it may cause this, that, and whatever, whatever. You know, so evidently, the good that it does do has some acceptable levels of side effects that might kill, some of them might even kill you. And that's probably a drug that took them 3 or 4 or 5 years to get the approval to put it on the market. So I'm sure that the powers that be come with an acceptable level of negative results, right? But they determine that the good results outweigh the bad results. That the good of it outweighs the bad. Maybe they determine that out of 100,000 population, that 20 of them might die. They accepted that. Maybe that 20 or 30 that might adversely affect them, maybe it might even be fatal. That might be an acceptable level for them to go ahead and approve it. Because if they don't give this, maybe 300 would die. Now, so that might be, now where, and I, you know, for the scholars out there, excuse me, I welcome you to press one, and maybe I'm taking it through the wrong sense. But where have we heard that concept where the good of it outweighs the bad? Where have we heard that from? Right? And we've heard it, well, I heard it in the Quran, where Allah says in the Quran that they ask you about gambling and intoxicants, right? They ask you about gambling and intoxicants. And the question goes on that the good of it, in gambling and toxicity, the harm outweighs the good. The harm outweighs the good. So here Allah is using a way for us to weigh something. And he weighed it. There's some good in it. But the harm outweighs the good. Right? There's some good in alcohol. The medicinal purpose and whatever. But Allah says the harm of alcohol outweighs the good. What does that mean? The negative effects, the adverse effects in the society on alcohol, because man just don't limit it. You know, they don't sell all, they don't have these liquor stores and all these other places and all these commercials to sell the alcohol as a medicinal solution. All the rappers that we know and all these famous brothers that we know, and maybe even sisters now, ain't selling alcohol or booze or liquor for medicinal purposes. They're pushing it to drink. Right? That's why they're pushing it. It seems to be part of the game plan now. You make a name for yourself, and then you start selling your own alcohol brand. Jay-Z is one of the ones that come into mind, and some other, but I don't know, I don't know the names of these things, but they sell it now, and they make it seem so exotic and enticing. And then the young brothers and sisters start buying it to drink. And that's when the bad effects of it come into play. And it torments our community. So anyway. So the harm of it outweighs the good of it. Right? So maybe the people that make the vaccine were using that same kind of litmus test. That the good of the vaccine outweigh the bad. In other words, it don't kill as many people. But they have an acceptable level. The same way that all these drugs they have guys on CDs, and they go through all the things that it does good for you, then they tell you what are some of the side effects you need to be aware of. But they determine that the side effects only affect a few people. It doesn't affect everybody like that. All right? So why don't, on conspiracy theories, why aren't they using that as a conspiracy too? See, they're trying to kill us. They're trying to get us to take this prescription. Because they know some people die from it. Anyway, so after my discussion with my barber, just to let everybody know, he did a good job on my head. Had no adverse effects. And our discussion did not affect him cutting my hair. All right, he didn't nick me or anything like that. So maybe I was just being overly cautious because there's hardly a day go by that there's not some conspiracy that doesn't cross me and have a discussion on it. Somebody sent me a link on Instagram. And when I saw the link, in the outline of it, it was, I thought somebody was saying, well, I know Adam's a Muslim, maybe I'll send him this. I thought it was about the religion of the Quran or something. I clicked on the link. And there was a brother talking about Bin Laden. Right? And how Bin Laden, I mean, it's not really nothing new. Everybody knows that Bin Laden was used by the CIA during the war in Afghanistan. Everybody knew that. And then he flipped on him. See, that's not truly a conspiracy in that regard. That's more like part of the operations of the CIA. That's part of the tactics of the war. So that's not really the kind of conspiracy that we like to talk about. That has people all up in arms. Everything is conspiracy. They're trying to keep us down. They're trying to mess with us after America. See, one day we're gonna realize. I think, you know, if I wasn't a moral person, I'd probably make a lot of money. I'll probably tell the Caucasian, man, I don't have to do anything. Our community, African Americans, on self-destruction. Whatever y'all did 100, 200 years ago, y'all can step back and don't worry about it. It's a lot. Because we're going to undermine our own efforts naturally. And that's why the Caucasian is upset, I believe. He's tired of talking about racism. He's probably over there thinking, we ain't doing nothing to y'all. Y'all are doing it to yourself. Why y'all blame us for everything? Why y'all blame our ancestors? Yeah, they did. What they did was bad, but you can't learn from that and do better on your own. So they're probably tired of being accused. Heck, their children coming home from school all messed up in the mind because somebody taught them about the racist past of America. And the way they taught it, they were looking at them. And it made them feel uncomfortable. Them innocent little children, they feel uncomfortable. We put the burden of everything that's bad today on them. And they feel uncomfortable. So the Caucasians are probably saying, we need to get somebody like Ron DeSantis, you know, and help us fight this stuff. Because our children are going to grow up lacking anything, no self-regard, no good self-concept, embarrassed about history. Our children are going to grow up like that. And that ain't right. We liked it the other way. When the African-American children grew up with a bad self-concept. Right? And all we did was teach about slavery and how slavery was a good job training program. Look at the skills they got today because of what they did during slavery. Why don't they teach their children that? That your dad is a painter because he used to paint the plantation for free. Why don't they talk about that? No, but they want to talk about critical race theory and all that stuff. And our children are growing up with a bad self-concept. So let's talk about conspiracy theories. Because there's a whole bunch of them out there. All over the map, there's some conspiracies that are out there that are happening because of what somebody's doing. You know, I'll tell you what, I'm going to play a PSA and give a chance for y'all to catch up. And if anybody has a comment, please press one and come in the queue if you have anything you want to say. So we'll be right back after this PSA.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Kareem Hamid, radio station manager for American Muslim 360 Radio, inviting all hosts to the upcoming host meeting scheduled this Saturday from 12 to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Assalamu alaikum.
Family, community, city, state, country, and more. Everything starts with you, the individual, you. What is the character of you? Are you a book? Can you be read? Join us every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a wonderful hour of information being shared by you, with you, for you, the you in all of us. I am Martha Naila Abdullah, and I am your host for Community Developmental Stages. Again, every Friday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., be there.
All right, this is Adam B.R., your host of Money Sense here on AM 26 on this Thursday morning, and we're just talking about conspiracy theories and how much it encompasses a lot of our daily whatever, because people got one for everything. So let's go to the phone lines. Area code 914-434. 914-434.
Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum assalam. My name is Muhammad Sharif here.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, I hadn't thought about what you just said a few minutes ago about our community, our community, part of our community conversation. Mm-hmm. Without, you know, like the first thing I would say, you give us the time to you make a PCS of self-service announcement, give us a chance to catch up. I don't know what you meant by that, but anyway, I said, yeah, maybe we're trying to catch up to what Dr. Jamal Rashid said. Yeah, maybe we're trying to catch up that. Oh, they put some heavy stuff on this morning, you know, so maybe we're trying to catch up on that. Then you came on with yours, too, and took us in another direction. I hadn't thought about that. But anyway, you're correct, in a sense, because you know what happened to us about what we were taught and given, and now we're going to put the same thing on there.
I was being tongue in cheek with that. Really, if you really picked up the nuance, when I hear the Caucasian make their argument about so-called critical race theory and how it's affecting their poor children, you know, our children have been going through that for 400 years. They ain't never thought about us. They ain't never thought about how would it affect us, our children, to grow up in the classroom talking about history and not talking about anything that we contributed to this country. So I'm really my way of saying I really don't want to hear what their so-called complaints are. Really, I really don't. And those weak excuses they're trying to use about how their children might feel. When they did it for us for a long time, brother, and they considered deadly about how our children feel. You know what I mean? Anyway, go ahead. Let me start.
Yeah, there's something to think about. Maybe it's your loss. So I guess I'll leave it at that. Let somebody else call in with their thoughts, you know.
Okay. All right, thank you, brother. All right, take care. All right, assalamu alaikum. All right, here, walaikum assalam. And this was a lecture, an interview given by the lady, ma'am, Kamala Dean. He's an independent man, Muhammad. And there's something the ma'am said. You know, the ma'am said a few things in a conspiracy. But this was the interview that was published in July 25th, 1983. And the ma'am said, I want to bring something to your mind. I take the position that the whole world is under one power, one conspirator force. Every part of the world except the Quran. Even the Hadith has been touched by their conspiracy. Even the commentary of the Quran has been touched by their conspiracy. The only thing that has not been touched by this conspiracy is the word of Allah, revealed to Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And then the Imam Kamal asked, or made a comment. Also, I heard you speak of, not only you, I heard others speak of it also, of a world conspiracy to lead people away from religion and belief in God. Imam Muhammad said, yes. When I say world of conspiracy, I'm not referring to any particular nation. I'm not referring to a particular group or organization. When I say world conspiracy, I'm talking about a lot of disorganized, unorganized criminals who would like to keep life hellish, to keep life corrupt, who would like to make money at any cost at the expense of human life experience. All right. So that's one of the things the Imam said on it. All right. Another thing, he goes into another this is from his lecture, Plan for Making Life Better. He said, all right, scriptures forecast the coming of threatening developments with the power to deform life, the life given to us from our Creator. Threatening development that's coming with the power to deform life. That means change you from a human being that God made to being another creature, something foreign, something different from what God made you. And they said that this would happen through the natural makeup, through the way that we are naturally made. This would be possible. As God made us upon nature, the world would unmake us and deform us upon the same nature. I'm not speaking of any conspiracy. I don't believe in any great conspiracy, so great that I can explain everything bad happening to all of us and to all people. I don't believe in no conspiracy that great, unless it is a conspiracy of only Shaitan himself, and this is in Scripture. Only Shaitan himself is to be seen as the conspirator who is so wise, so powerful. He has such a powerful influence over the weakness of the weak people that he can bring about a global conspiracy. And it's only Satan, only Shaitan. I'm not going to deal with my Irish competitor, with my Polish competitor, as though he's powerful, as though he has power to be that kind of conspirator. He has not the power to do that. He has no more power than we have. But Shaitan has power that we don't have. Shaitan has power that, because in the first place, we don't have the nature to close our ear to goodness and not hear anything good and plan all evil and nothing. Feel no sorrow, no regret, no nothing. Shaitan does. Shaitan can do this. Shaitan has that nature. We can't be that. Human beings cannot have a conspiracy over the whole world. It's impossible. Only Shaitan can have a conspiracy that covers the world. Most of the humans that are in this system are in Satan's conspiracy. They don't even know what they're doing. They don't even know that Shaitan has gotten them. But again, the best way to defeat Shaitan is to defeat his scheme. That's the only way. You can't defeat him unless you attack his scheme and defeat his scheme. All right? So, I just wanted to say that. But the man said that the whole, this conspiracy thing, they put that language in everything. The only thing that language is not in is the Quran. Allah said he would preserve it. So when we pick up these hadith, the only way we can be sure that it's sound is to understand it. You have to know the Quran first. You have to know that first. All right. So when I think about the conspiracies that I hear every day, and people are telling me this is part of this conspiracy, so I ask them, what is the program and what you're talking about? How can what you bring to me, how can that keep me safe? I don't see a program in it. I don't see a thought out, consistent, sensible path to saving myself and my family by what you're telling me. I don't see that. And I don't see what are you suggesting that I do? And they never come up with that. They never come with it. They leave you in limbo because they don't know. They don't have a plan. They don't have a solution. It's just to leave me in limbo. Okay, I can't take this I can't take the COVID-19 shot, according to you, because it's designed to kill you, brother. It's designed to do things to you. Okay, I can't do that. What can I do? And they don't have a solution. Right? They haven't got that far because they don't know. So as Muslims, what do we have? As the Imam stated, the only thing that is untouched is the Quran in the life example of our Prophet Muhammad. That's the only thing that's not touched. That is our solution. Yeah. Right? And that's what we should lean on and require. And we think a lot left in our midst. Imam Muhammad. Because he is from us. And he has a unique understanding of the Quran in terms of how we should apply it in our life and what we should do. Right. So when you understand that, and I pray Allah helps me to grow an understanding of that and to grow an understanding of this religion so that I can make myself immune to all this conspiracy stuff that is designed to have me to be further lost, right? To be further lost, right? Because I just don't. I mean, remember in the Quran, Allah says that when lightning strikes, man stops. But the lightning is bringing the light. And we shouldn't be when there's light. If there's light and we can't move because we don't know, then that ain't the light we need. That's not the correct light that we need. Because it should show us the way. It should show us the path. All right. So, and I'm hoping that you're getting something from this, because I know if you're like me, all day, every day, we get these things and we're fearing this, we're fearing that, and everything is conspiracy. Keep in mind, we got a whole group of people now that have been affected by conspiracy. Don't even talk about politics. This is ridiculous. But they've been affected by conspiracy. We have a former president that is a purveyor of conspiracies in his group, right? Everything is a conspiracy. It's Joe Biden that's a conspiracy, Hunter Biden, right? They should go after them and not me. But you're the one that got caught. You're the one that's over there lying. But I was surprised there are people that I thought were decent people. And they've accepted it. Like, surely they got to know that some of the stuff he's doing is lying. It's so obvious. But they've accepted that. Why? Because they want their side to win. And they want their side to win irregardless of the outcome, irregardless of the method. Right? Irregardless of that. So they'll accept that under the guise that the Biden and his group, his family, are the big conspirators. They're part of this big conspiracy to deny him his ability to run for president again. So they want to circumvent the Constitution that they claim that they honor. So all these things are happening all around us. So the question for you and I is, what do we do? What's our role in it? What should we be doing as Muslims? How should we get involved? That's our question. All right. Got another call on here. Okay, good. Go back to the phone line. So, assalamu alaikum, Muhammad. What you got for me?
Yeah. You know, I guess the answer to that is, well, what we have to do is increase our faith. And that is, remember what Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon the Prophet, what he said in the last prayer address? He said, I leave you two things. But the aim, my life example. So mm-hmm. tell that anything else will leave us astray. Wondering. That's the answer. The can and our life example. And we have proof of that. Imam Dabadeen Mohammed. When he was a teenager, I think he was about 13 or 14 years old. You know, he was telling when his mother and father went to the temple to have, take care of some business. He was in the house by himself, and he prayed to Allah, right. If I'm not seeing you correctly, help me to see you correctly. And then on, we know he went all the way to the top of the world, talked to the planet from the Vatican. And that's what he used, all his life examples, from 13 years old or so. We have to do the same thing. He's the best example of Prophet Muhammad. He found the Quran and Muhammad's life example. That's on our only hope out. Anything else will leave us out in space somewhere.
Okay, you're right, brother. So the question is, how should that manifest in this society for us, right? In terms of what types of things, you know, what is our obligation with this knowledge? Because we hear it a lot. Well, how should that materialize in the society we live in? And what is our responsibility? Right?
Well, I put this way. Imam say, the wives of the world will be following our leadership for the next 1,000 years. That's what Imam said. The wives of the world will be following our leadership for the next 1,000 years. That's a long time. So we should follow Imam Muhammad.
I understand what you're saying. But how should that materialize in our actions? It's just like a seed. And the seed is planted. And eventually that seed is going to break the ground, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to come up. And it might first materialize as a bud, or a sprig out of there, and eventually it's going to grow. So how should that materialize in terms of our actions and in terms of society? When are we to become an example for people? You follow me? Or are we still below the dirt? Ain't broke the ground yet. You follow me?
Well,
and that's the question I have.
Okay. Well, I'll let you give us your answer on that. But let somebody else call in. He got it. I give it back to you. The ball back in your court.
Okay. So anybody that got, as Muhammad said, anybody got a comment on that? Just press one to come in. Let me hear what you think about. Because I think we have to have this kind of a conversation, brother. You know, I was listening to a cook bar the other day where the brother was saying that in a similar thing, he's saying don't be carried away with these conspiracies and things. Don't be carried away to where you let it rule your life. And I agree. I mean, I don't let it rule my life. But there's something I'm hearing in this religion that I have an obligation. You know, and what comes to mind is when Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, he says, when you see an evil, he said, remove it with your hands. And he says, if you're not free to remove it with your hands, then remove it with your mouth. Speak against it.
Right.
And if you're not free enough to remove it with your mouth, he says, hate it with your heart. But know that the heart is the weakest of means. You heard of that, right?
Yeah, remember that, yes.
Are we just be heart people? We need some hands and some mouth people. You follow?
Yes, follow.
So at the end of the khutbah, the way it was put, he wants everybody to be at most heart people. No, we need some hands people. We need some mouth people. Let's go to the phone. I do have a caller, Muhammad, that took up your call and answered it. So let's go to area code 251-404. 251-404. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Adam. How you doing? This is Haseeb from Mobile, Alabama. I was just thinking over the conversation and the conversation we had this morning with words, persuasive words. And look like today we're being persuaded along these conspiracy theories. And as far as the Muslim community, it is affecting the, you know, members in our community. They are persuaded by these conspiracy theories that when you talk to them, especially along the line of politics, and it just depends on whatever party that they affiliate. And I don't think we necessarily use the religion to so much justify our political. We kind of separate religion and state, you know, when it comes to that. If they on one side, they don't look for whether it's the truth or whether, you know, it's distorted or just an outright lie. They get on the side and defend it, which if they're defending a lie, is against the religion that they profess to confess, you know. But that is happening in our community also because yes, we man. See it as something separate. Like this country promotes, even though in reality they know it's not. So we do have to be careful of that. They got a lot of, and I guess the reason we call it conspiracy because it's not based on truth. It takes some truth to make this conspiracy because every lie has got some truth in it. You know, they can't come up with a lie unless they put some truth to make it believable. if it's going to be believable, right. you got to add some truth in there that people can relate to, and then you distort it. And, you know, as the Quran say, they take it the word from its rightful place and they put them in another place to give another meaning, a completely different meaning, which then makes it the untruth, a lie. And that's what's happening out here, and it's being promoted a lot. And I just, you know, I didn't think people would defend this, that they, in their heart, they know it's a lie, but I got to defend it because it's my boy that's telling it. You know, and I guess that ain't nothing new. It's probably go down generational. I was watching that movie, The Resurrection, and there was one community there, a group of Muslims there that was, you know, they was trying to practice their religion, but his son, the head person over the group, and his son did some wrongdoing, which was against his mom and against everything they believed. But then they took the attitude of trying to cover it up, which is a conspiracy again, to cover up the truth and promote a false idea of what happened when they knew what the truth was. So I just wanted to add that to give us something to think about, because it's happening a lot out here, and unfortunately it is catching a lot of us who think that we should know better. We've fallen into the trap too. So I just wanted to add that to this conversation, because it is the most important conversation that we're talking about, because it's out. And now we see here the individual that held one of the highest office, the highest office in this country, being charged with the conspiracies that he committed out here. So we need to take that for what it's worth and look for the truth rather than who it is that's doing it.
We're just like the I forgot his name, Jack Smith or whatever. He said it's not against the law to lie. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
He's not being charged with lying because it's not against the law to lie. But it is against the law to take to do some of the things he did, such as. Mm-hmm. And try to use the Justice Department to support the lie and try to get other people
mm-hmm.
to support that. Those things are against
right.
the law. So
right.
he's
yes.
not being charged because he's a liar. Sure, he's been charged a long time ago. He's been lying for
yes.
years.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was very interesting. So for those Muslims
yeah.
that are supporting him, those Muslims that are supporting him, just know it's not against the law to support a liar, so
mm-hmm.
they make it, they'll feel better about it. You're not being charged because you're supporting a liar, but what he did happen.
Yeah.
Now,
mm-hmm.
in the Muslim community, we're going to look at you funny because you're supporting a liar, just like you said, Brother Henry. But it's not against
right.
the law. It's
mm-hmm.
not against the Constitution to lie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
right.
my brother, I appreciate that, Brother Henry. For those of you that are in that line, you're all right. You're not breaking the law. You know. So you can support the law all you want to. But just know, Islamically speaking, I think it might be against that law. But you got to deal with that. All right, Muhammad. So, Brother Henry took you up on your offer, brother. Hope that was good. What do you think about that? Muhammad, bear down on me. You on mute, brother? All right.
Oh Henry. Yeah, I guess I was on mute.
So,
yep. Thank you.
Yeah.
You think, but now Henry for that. Great help. Great help.
Yes, sir. All right, so well, we're about at the end of our program. We've got another minute to go, according to my estimation, and we're getting ready for Imam Yusuf Ramadan, whose topic today is demystifying economics. Demystifying economics. And that sounds like a really good program, because when you talk about money and the whole thing, it is a mystery. Because I subscribe to what Kiyosaki wrote in his book, that the average American lacks an adequate financial education. And we're in a capitalistic society. Just me throwing this in there. We're in a capitalistic society. When you don't know the laws of capitalism, you get capitalized on. And you got a whole lot of people that are being capitalized on, taken advantage of. So it should be a good topic. So I encourage everybody to stay online and get ready for your man, Yusuf Ramadan. We're going to bow out of here. And inshallah, we'll be back on board next Thursday at 8 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you. The one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to AM 360. Join your host, Munira Habil, every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we explore relationship topics addressing what we didn't know, what we've learned, and what we need to know and why. Because on this show, it's all about courtship and marriage.
American Muslim 360 is proud to present the Thursday morning edition of A New Day for Al-Islam in America Radio with your host, Yusuf Ramadan.
Assalamu alaikum. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Let peace be unto you. With God's name, merciful benefactor and merciful redeemer, we'd like to welcome everyone to New Day for Islam in America, American Muslim 360 edition, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation. My name is Yusuf Ramadan, and this is the program that deals with current events, trending topics, and issues of concern from the Muslim perspective. And as we always say, the Muslim perspective is and always should be the human perspective. So today's topic, as our beloved brother Imam Adam said, what is demystifying economics? But as we say in our intro every week, it's also about current events and trending topics. So, you know, it is, I'm thankful to my brother for his program, you know, Money Sense. And it kind of leads us into what we want to talk about But also, we'd like to broach that subject that they were touching upon with known as those people referred to as a conspiracy theory, and conspiracy theories. And we know that some people get way out there. You know, now they're hitting us with you know, the UFO theories, you know, about them having certain bodies, excuse me, non-human bodies that they don't want us to know about, et cetera, et cetera. And I've seen no evidence to that end. And I will say that, I will say this, whatever they find, UFO, unidentified flying object, et cetera, it won't change the fact that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the Lord of all the systems of knowledge. All the systems of knowledge. Lord of all the worlds, okay? And so it doesn't matter what aliens or whatever they want to call it. But there's some things going on here, and what I want you to know on this planet, on this level, you know, don't take that word, you know, for granted, that phrase, a conspiracy theory. Actually, that word was coined by the CIA. Did you know that? Yeah. Conspiracy theory, there's also conspiracy fact. Conspiracy is just people getting together for the purpose of furthering whatever agenda that they have, okay? A conspiracy, you know, is people getting together, two or more people coming together to further their goals. Now, it might be for something good, you know. It might not, okay? Allah says in most of their secret meetings, there is no good, okay? In most of their secret meetings, there is no good. So a conspiracy is, and this is what I want to talk about because it affects us, definitely affects us, you know, the Muslim community. A conspiracy is a secret plan by a group to do something unlawful or harmful. She served 5 years in prison for taking part in a conspiracy to sell stolen artwork. Now, that's their the dictionary definition. But what do you mean by unlawful? It breaks the law. Oh, brother man, what do you mean? What do I mean? Because everything lawful is not moral. Huh? Everything lawful is not moral. I mean, it's not right. Just because it's lawful don't mean that it's right. People make laws. They make the law. They tell you what's lawful and unlawful. Gambling used to be unlawful. Playing numbers, playing policy here in New York. Now you can't even get to the count. I'm not just talking about the lottery, where you got 8, 9, 10. I'm talking about the three numbers that black people used to engage in quite a bit. But not from the time I was a young man. So it was unlawful. And now it is lawful when they do it. They advertise betting and gambling. Sports betting used to be illegal. And now all your top entertainers, all your top entertainers, they're using them as spokespeople for FanDuel and you name it. So the conspiracy definition, it means a plot or intrigue or machination, a conspiracy, a cabal, mean a plan secretly devised to accomplish an evil or treacherous end. You don't believe in that? That's the way that they get things done. You better believe in it. You don't believe that people get together to accomplish their goals, secretly accomplish their goals, the other people won't know what they're doing, to get an advantage on other people? Absolutely, they do. I don't think it should be open for discussion of whether or not that takes place. But specifically, what I wanted to bring to you was something that affects us. Something that affects us, and that is, and not only us in general, but specifically, okay? And that is that, FBI orchestrated conspiracy, okay? Now, this was directed against African-American Muslims in one of our masjids in upstate New York by an imam who's a friend of mine that's been on this show, Salahuddin Muhammad, okay? They sent these brothers to jail for, 14 years? The judge finally released them on what they call compassionate release. I don't know how compassionate it was. I'm glad she finally released them. I just want you to hear. I want you to hear. I don't know if I can play it. Let's see. Yeah, no, while I'm talking to you on my phone, but I'm gonna put it on. I'm gonna put it on my other. I'm gonna put it on the other phone and send that to it. Huh? And the brother said there should be absolutely no one shot by the FBI conspiring against the poor and downtrodden. Desperate men need a break. FBI, the creation of J. Edgar Hoover and COINTELPRO, which was against the Nation of Islam, too. Y'all got some short memories. Huh? They followed the members of the Nation of Islam around also. Hmm? But I'm going to find it for you. You know, I had meant to bring that in a little bit, but being that you discussed it, and the imam gave us some of the papers of the COINTELPRO, which means counterintelligence program, where they talked about Imam W.D. Muhammad, that it appears that he is not motivated by money. Yeah, it appears. He's not motivated by money. So a brother sent me a thing saying he gets on question of blacks being arrested more. Mm-hmm. And victim of crimes disproportionately in white doesn't mean they're actually guilty. So when they give you statistics and tell you, oh, yeah, well, blacks are being disproportionately arrested and convicted, that don't mean they should have been arrested or that other people that weren't arrested shouldn't have been arrested. You get my point? So you look at the stats that they're giving you. You can look at the stats that they're giving you, okay? And I'm going to pull it up now. I'm going to pull this up right now before we get into the economic theory that we want to talk about, because it's all related to economics, you know? It's all related, all right? They came after these brothers in upstate New York, Newburgh. I've been up there many times. I've taught up there many times. You know, the Juma and other programs, you know. And because of the following the sense, the common sense, that Imam W.D. Muhammad, the track of common sense and following the guidance of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that this is the Ummat al-Wusta, the midway community, not going too far to the right or too far to the left, not following extremism, not falling behind extremism. We've never had anyone charged with any type of terrorism or anything in this community. Those brothers that got involved with that, even though they were attending that masjid, when Imam Nuruddin, Imam Salahuddin shared with me, those brothers were not real, frequent attendees at the masjid. They would come once in a while. They were poor brothers that had been to prison. They didn't have any. Their financial aspects weren't good, okay? They didn't have good sound financial establishment. And they came after them. They targeted them, offering them $250,000, et cetera. And they were set up. I'm looking for it right now. I'm going to get it for you. They were set up, targeted, and told what targets they were going to have. They made up they didn't have no weapons. They didn't have no money. They had to look up, Google certain things, because they didn't have any finances, even to carry anything out, even if that's what they were interested in doing, which they weren't. Okay? Which they weren't. So I don't know why it's giving me a hard on this video that I'm pulling up, but I'm gonna send it to my other phone so I can play it and it won't interfere. It shouldn't interfere with this particular phone. Okay, so just be a little patient with me. Okay, be a little patient. I'm gonna send it right now, so we can play it, because we should be aware of it. We should be aware of it. I don't know why we're not aware of this, but it was a big case. I remember when it happened. Now here it is. Here it is.
I'm Amy Goodman. A federal judge has ordered the release of three New York men were sentenced to 25 years in prison for their role in a government-orchestrated bombing plot. The men,
or conspiracy,
became known as the Newburgh Four. They were convicted in 2010, sentenced to 25 years in prison for placing what they thought were bombs in a New York synagogue. Supporters of the men have long argued they were entrapped by the government. On Thursday, U.S. District Judge Colleen McMahon issued a stunning ruling ordering the compassionate release of three of the four men. In her ruling, she wrote, quote, a person reading the crimes of conviction in this case would be left with the impression that the offending defendants were sophisticated international terrorists committed to jihad against the United States. However, they were in actual reality hapless, easily manipulated, penurious, petty criminals. McMahon said the men were not terrorists, but, quote, impoverished, small-time grifters and drug users, street-level dealers who could use some money. She wrote, quote, the FBI invented the conspiracy, identified the targets, manufactured the ordinance, unquote. The FBI has relied on an informant who was involved in several other high-profile entrapment cases within the Muslim community. Democracy Now! Has closely followed the case of the Newburgh Four since 2010, when Democracy Now!'s Anjali Kamat and Hani Massoud and Jackie Suwin of Big Noise Films traveled through Muslim communities in New York and New Jersey to track the Newburgh case and two other entrapment cases. In October 2010, Democracy Now! Aired a special investigation into these cases. This clip begins with Anjali Kamat.
On May 20th, 2009, four African-American men from the city of Newburgh, New York, were arrested outside a synagogue in the Bronx. Known as the Newburgh Four, they made national headlines as stark examples of homegrown terror. Prosecutors described the suspects as extremely violent men who embraced every opportunity for terrorism. More than a year after their arrest, the Newburgh Four are now facing trial in Manhattan for conspiracy to use weapons of mass destruction and anti-aircraft missiles. But the cases raise serious questions about the government's role in creating and then foiling fake terror plots.
The suspects were duped. The bombs and missiles were fake, supplied by the FBI and NYPD.
Alicia McCollum is the aunt of David Williams, one of the Newburgh Four. Since his arrest, she's tried to mobilize support for her nephew. Taking the train to the first day of the trial in August, she's visibly upset.
I was restless last night. I couldn't even sleep. You know, it was just so much. You know, you think about the family and what you're getting ready to go through. And it's like this whole year fighting for the case. And now it's like finally happening. It was almost the trial. And just worried, you know, that the government, you know, want to make a case so bad that heavy on my mind last night. Very heavy.
Like the other members of the Newburgh Four, 29-year-old David Williams lived in the economically devastated city of Newburgh and had served prison time on drug charges and
economically devastated city.
All four men were converts to Islam, and one of them, Laguerre Payen, is a Haitian-born immigrant and a paranoid schizophrenic. Alicia says she was shocked when she heard that these four men were being called terrorists.
That was an excerpt from the 2010 Democracy Now! Investigation by Anjali Kamath and Jackie Suen. Alicia McWilliams McCollum went on to directly accuse the government of entrapping her nephew.
Now, entrapment means somebody is not participating in a crime. It could be drugs or whatever. And you come up to them and say, hey, you know where I can get some drugs? Oh, I know we can get drugs, man, for a good price. That's called entrapment. But look, under that federal law, there's no entrapment defense. Who put the law together? See, they messed your mind up. Oh, when the feds come here, they got you because they got the best lawyers. Well, what happens when those lawyers who work for the Department of so-called Justice, what happens when they become defense attorneys? They're not the best lawyers anymore? They just finished telling y'all that the reason why the sister who is in the WNBA, the reason why she's over there in the Russian jail, because they have a 99% conviction rate, so she don't stand a chance. But they didn't follow up that up by telling you that the federal government has a 98% conviction rate here in America. They were saying that 99% conviction rate meant that it wasn't a fair system. So how come, with the Russians, but how come we have a 98% conviction rate? Not because they got the top lawyers. The top lawyers, you got defense attorneys that went to the same Harvard, Yale, and Princeton that they went to. But it's set up in such a way that you're not going to win. So most people, it's not that they win all their cases. Most people cop out and plead guilty. Not because they are guilty, but because they realize that it's going to be very hard for them to win. And they'd rather come home after doing 20 years than stay in prison for 30 or 40 years. So you listen to New Day Father Islam in America, American Muslim 360 edition. The number one Islamic radio station in the nation. So we have some important announcements for you. So please don't touch that dial. We'll be back in a while.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
Family, community, city, state, country, and more. Everything starts with you, the individual, you. What is the character of you? Are you a book? Can you be read? Join us every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a wonderful hour of information being shared by you, with you, for you, the you in all of us. I am Martha Naila Abdullah, and I am your host for Community Developmental Stages. Again, every Friday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., be there.
Peace be with you, and welcome to Positive Solutions to Critical Issues, hosted by yours truly, Dr. Jamal Rashid, and instructor Henry Hasid. This program They are sociologically as well as psychologically inclined, with Hitler as its base. We examine the root seed to multiple effects that impact our holistic daily lives. So tune in each and every Thursday morning from 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time here on American Muslim 360. Thank you, and have a pleasant day.
And we're back. Yeah, so we need to be aware of these things. If you're not aware of it, we know that this happened quite a bit during the so-called War on Terror, where they made Muslims the face of terror. They made Muslims the face of terror, you know, after 9/11. And you're talking, don't dismiss conspiracy on anybody's part. People that sell drugs, they have no problem with sending you to jail for being involved in conspiracy, but they want to make it ridiculous when you talk about conspiracy that they're involved in. People that are involved in economics, trying to corner a market, pharmaceutical, or natural resources, gold and silver, that's ridiculous, right? That people would come together. No, you better think about it. Let's continue.
You are sending a woman to a impoverished community, the most impoverished county, to do your trickery. You ain't stumbled upon a cell. Nobody ain't tell you that someone was plotting to do anything. You created a crime.
That was Alicia McWilliams McCullum speaking in 2010. She died last year after fighting for over a decade for the release of her nephew, David Williams, and the other members of the Newburg Four.
This woman died under those conditions. Never saw her nephew released.
90 days after last week's stunning judicial ruling. We're joined now by two lawyers who are part of the Coalition for Civil Freedoms, which was founded in 2010 to challenge preemptive prosecution and the post-9/11 targeting, surveillance, and criminalization of Muslim communities. Kathy Manley is legal director for the Coalition for Civil Freedoms, and Stephen Downs is the chair of the Coalition's Board of Directors, former chief attorney for the Commission on Judicial Conduct in New York State. Stephen Downs and Kathy Manley, welcome to you now. Kathy Manley, why don't we start with you? The significance of this ruling yesterday by the federal judge, tell us exactly.
And you know why she waited so long? The federal judge, she was scared. I remember her talking about it when the trial was going on, because the political climate was so strong. Any judge that would dare question the government would have been in big trouble politically. Big trouble. Her conscience finally got to her, and she released those brothers after more than 10 years in prison. She spoke out about it after one of the brothers was what they call retarded, mentally retarded. He didn't know left from right. This is not the only case. There was a case right there in Almaty where a young brother, the family was from Algeria.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think.
Yes, we got disconnected for some reason. I don't know why, but we got disconnected. But I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, so I'll just say it was coincidence. Okay? So this is important that you be aware of this, and it happened. One of the brothers, a family, went to our school, Crown Muhammad School. His brother, he had two other brothers. It destroyed that family. The young brother that went in there, he was He didn't have no money. They had him. They offered him to buy silencers and all kind of other sophisticated. He didn't even have no money. They offered him a silencer for $100. $100, and he couldn't even hardly come up with that. And he was busy online. His mind was so messed up. He was online trying to engage prostitutes. And, I mean, the guy was all over the place. Young kid. Destroyed that family. He wasn't harmful. He wasn't thinking about anything like that. But my point is, why would you, if you came together to put this plot together, why would you tell them to target a synagogue? You don't want to think about that, right? They didn't know what to target. You told them to talk. Why? So that you can say what, Muslims are anti-Semitic? You tell me why they picked that target, because those brothers didn't pick nothing. Now, for those of you that are a little dim with it, say, well, brother, if they were straight, they wouldn't know that. Look, everybody is not that strong. They've come around us before, and we had to laugh at them. We laughed at them because we knew that they were agents. The imam talked about agent provocateurs. You all forgot that? You don't believe nothing unless you put in front of it the imam said. I can tell you the truth, but you won't accept it unless you somebody said the imam said this, the imam said that. Then you might believe. But the imam talked about agent provocateurs going all the way back to the Nation of Islam. Y'all forgot about that? There was agents in there. In the Nation of Islam. They said there was an agent when Malcolm got killed there at the Audubon Ballroom. That was part of Malcolm's security staff. So don't get messed up. Don't get your mind messed up when they start coming with aliens and all that other stuff and thinking that, you know, the idea is to make you scoff at anything that might be called a conspiracy. And you were talking about lying. They were talking about lying. Do you know that it's legal for the government to lie to for the law enforcement to lie to you, but you will go to jail if you lie back to them? Now some of y'all are so messed up. You think, well, that should be legal. They should be able to lie to you. Why? A lie is a lie, isn't it? So we know that during the time of Marcus Garvey, when the so-called mafia was being formulated and getting strong in America, and J. Edgar Hoover said he didn't believe in the mafia. He said his number one enemy was the United Negro Improvement Association, Marcus Garvey. Then he said the most dangerous man in America was not Elijah Muhammad, not H. Rap Brown, Martin Luther King. Y'all forgot that? Yeah, don't take my word for it. Google it. And see for yourself. So this is something that I want to bring to your attention so that you don't get rocked to sleep. You don't fall asleep. Okay? But the people who brought that conspiracy against those brothers, what happened to them now? Nothing? It's okay? So now I want to get into our topic, which really I wanted to be our first topic, but you know when I heard the program, I meant to address this anyway. When I heard the previous program, then that made me get into this. Okay, so this is called Debt Empires and Oligarchs by Dr. Michael Hudson, okay? He's an economist, and they exploited those brothers being in that situation where they don't have any money. That's why the imam taught us morals first. You can get money, but if you don't have morals, you don't have your morals together. When you get money, you're going to do some stupid things. Like this sister they were talking about that made millions of dollars after she was working in the post office, and then her life went to hell because she took that money, and not that she wasn't that type of person. The money, they say money won't change you. No, it amplifies you, the good that's in you, as well as your weaknesses. Now you can do whatever you want to do. You can max out on it. Dr. Michael Hudson. We're gonna give you Dr. Michael Hudson. All right. All right, let's go.
Listen, then if you fall behind in your credit card payments, then your interest rates go up from 19% to a penalty rate of 29%. The GDP accounts say that is providing financial services. GDP goes up. A little while ago, on this
gross domestic product,
my colleague Steve Kane, who feels the same way about economics, academic economics, the way that I do, and he was just in New York. We had a meeting 2 weeks ago here in Forest Hills, where I live, and he was telling me about how he'd come down from Harvard, where he'd given a paper on global warming, and his adversary was William Nordhaus, who had said, "Well, there's nothing to worry about global warming. If global warming would go up 2 degrees, mass flooding and everything, it would really only cut GDP by 0.2%. And I told Steve, I thought his response it should have been that actually global warming is going to help accelerate GDP. It'll add to GDP because, for one thing, there's going to be much more flooding, and you're going to have to rebuild houses again and again and again that are destroyed by extreme weather, the hurricane.
Listen to that.
A lot of rebuilding there, a lot of flooding, a lot of reconstruction. Disease actually has been helping GDP quite a bit because you have to now pay 18% of America's GDP for the Obamacare, for the medical care, much higher than the proportion of any other country. All of these things are considered GDP. Robbery helps the GDP goes up, and burglary, because people have to replace what's taken apart. So the GDP is a travesty of any measure of welfare or size, and it's a travesty of comparing a post-industrial economy like the United States, where the objective is not to produce anything at all, but to import it all, and economies that actually produce goods and services. So basically, my books are about the contrast between what academic economics says and what is reality. And all that means is, and I think the reason you invited me on this show is because economics is not really a science as it's taught. It's a lobbying effort by the finance, insurance, and real estate sector, the fire sector. It's a lobbying effort by parts of the economy that don't produce goods and services, that only collect income without playing any productive role at all. Empty prices, that is, price without any underlying value. That is being promoted as economic growth, and basically it's as if economics is like a criminal case in court where you have two opposing attorneys. The 19th century attorneys were prosecutors for the landlord class. They said, why should we have to pay the heirs of the warlords who conquered England and France to collect ground rent without producing anything? What possible function do they play? Why should we have to pay banks money for creating interest, for creating credit that actually the governments can simply create their own money or at least create credit for a productive purpose? And why do we permit monopolies, most of which were created by the government to sell off to creditors because it couldn't afford to pay them their debt? Why do we have to do anything of that? We don't need it. Let's get rid of the rentier sector. The rentier sector being landlords and bankers and monopolists. Well, by the end of the 19th century, the rentiers fought back, and they developed what a defense attorney would do in a trial. They said there's a whole different reality. There is no such thing as unearned income. There is no such thing as economic rent. Everybody deserves what they have. The landlord produces a valuable service in renting out the land and the housing and deciding who to rent to. And the bankers make a wonderful service when they charge interest, and especially when they charge penalty fees, because that helps make people pay their debts on time, and that's essential for productivity. So, of course, we charge penalty fees as part of the gross domestic product. And monopolies are also part of the GDP, because, after all, the monopolist is simply creating an orderly market. So, the problem is that instead of economic students getting both sides of the prosecution and the defense of the rentier economy, they're only getting one side of the picture. They're getting the defense of the rentiers, not the classical economics, and that's why in graduate economic courses, they no longer teach the history of economic thought.
That's right.
They no longer teach economic history, because if you had the history of economic thought, you'd know that contrary to what Margaret Thatcher said, there is an alternative, that things don't have to be this way. There is a reason why China is growing so rapidly and American economy is being squeezed tighter and tighter, and that's because of, it's basically using its revenue to create new means of production and create a broader environment. It's true that it provides education freely instead of charging $50,000 a year, which is what people have to pay in New York, but that if you would say, what if we credit China with every person with a degree is having paid $50,000 a semester or a year, obviously that would be much bigger. It's true that the Chinese people do not have to pay $4,500 a month rent, which is the average rent here in New York City.
That's right.
Does that really make them poor? Or does paying the $4,500 a month rent that increases America's GDP actually turn out to be an economic burden? I think orthodox neoliberal economics gets it wrong. And what is really an economic burden, or what classical economists call transfer payments, is to them a benefit, because they're the beneficiaries.
Okay, so we're going to pause it right there, and we're going to take a pause for the call. We have some important announcements for you. And so please, don't touch that dial. We'll be back in a while.
The peace be on you. Assalamu alaikum. My name is Omar Shakir, and I'm resident imam of Masjid Bilal Ibn Rabah in San Antonio, Texas. And I would like to invite you every first Sunday from 12 to 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time to join us for our class, where we're dealing with the subject matter of the basics in Islam. We are excited about this program, even if we're new Muslims or Muslims have been in the faith for many, many years. It is a wonderful opportunity to learn and understand this beautiful way of life. We also connected with various insights from the tafsir of Imam Waliduddin Muhammad radiallahu anhu, and we all explain its practical application. We look forward to being with you on every first Sunday of the month, where we would deal with the basics of Islam. The peace be on you. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Fitra Muhammad bringing you good news. Study Al-Islam Life Topic Series 2020 is back. How many times have you wondered, when reading the Quran, what were the challenges and circumstances that Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, was facing when Allah sent the angel Gabriel with inspired revelation? Join us at 10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time every Sunday to learn from our scholarly speakers. If you were unable to connect because your carrier charged the fee, you may now listen online at am360.org. For a complete schedule of our speakers, email studyalislam@gmail.com or pick up the Muslim Journal. Thank you.
All right, we are back. So if you if we haven't scared you away, press 1 on your phone and come in and ask a question or make a comment on what we're talking about. Dr. Hudson was bringing out some very important points. They count GDP, gross domestic product. They're saying so anything, no matter how bad the global warming is, or they don't see what the human cost is, they see how it affects their bottom line. Okay? If there's flooding, those houses have to be repaired or rebuilt, et cetera. So that's a good thing. Not mentioning the people who are being displaced or injured. They see $4,500 a month average rent in New York as a good thing. So he's asking the question, because the Chinese are not paying $4,500 a month rent, does that mean that they're poor? 949-689, state your name and where you're calling from, please.
As-salamu alaykum, Imam Ramadan, this is Brother Melvin. Yeah, calling out of Georgia, Atlanta, broader Atlanta area. And my question, I'm very thankful that you played that clip, and it was very interesting because I never even considered some of those other points that was made as contributing to the gross domestic product. And my question, or what I would like to say first, included with the question, is that, you know, I've been looking at this whole thing when they talk about the pyramids and how the pyramid is constructed, you know, and how it's, they're still trying to figure that out, you know, what a, you know, how it's, you know, a mystery to the world. And I'm believing that the pyramid is really like a symbol of the financial structure, because it is confusing. And this right here, when you pointed that out about the domestic product, it seems like that's another part of the confusion. Like, we don't see all of these things. And I wanted to know, does that make sense to you that it's very possible that the pyramid is really a symbol of the complete financial structure of the ruling order? And that's my question, in addition to the comment that I wanted to make about it.
Well, I think that's a good observation that you're making, because, you know, he goes on to talk about the 1%, you know, the 1%, and he talks about the FIRE structure, that is finance, insurance, and real estate. You know, they don't really produce anything, you know. And when we had the crash in 2008, you know, the banks were allowed to use that money for very risky ventures, credit default swap, CDS, and other things, you know. And then AIG, which was the biggest insurance company in the world, probably still is, they were insuring them. And then when it came time to pay, they said, well, we don't have it. We don't have that much money to pay off. And then the government stepped in, first with Bush, with the bailout, and then Obama came in and finished the rest, okay, and bailed them out, which means us, the public, bailed them out. So they don't believe in socialism. They're against socialism. They're for capitalism for the people. But they believe in socialism for themselves. If they'd have made $100 billion or $1 trillion, it's none of our business. But when they lose money, it is our business. Now we have to step in and bail them out. So you're correct. I think your theory is a good theory about that pyramid. It's smaller on the top, you see. And the imam spoke about the pyramid, saying, you know, that really the people on the top, they're the ones that get everything, and the people on the bottom, you know, they're fighting for crumbs.
Yeah.
And we really should be the other way around. The people on the top should be serving the people on the bottom. So I do like your symbol. And as always, we appreciate you and thank you for calling in. All right. Anyone else? Anyone else like to ask a question or make a comment? We gave you quite a bit today for you to chew on. I don't know whether you can digest it or whether it's too much for you. Maybe you think it's too much for you to chew. All right. I don't see anybody else coming into the queue. So press 1 on your phone. Don't wait till the last minute. We won't be able to do justice to your question or your comment. And we don't have that much time left. So we're going to continue with Dr. Michael Hudson. I think he's given us a very unique way of looking at economics. He says economics is not a science at all. And they're not even really teaching economic theory anymore like they used to in the schools. Okay, here we go.
Benefit because they're the beneficiaries. They're the landlords. They're the bankers that lend money to landlords to buy buildings to pay the rent as interest. We're in a kind of a rentier society where the actual production is viewed merely as overhead instead of the rentiers, the rent recipients, being an overhead on the productive economy. So you're having an inside-out perspective in all of this. I don't know how to say it more clearly than that.
Demystify Psy is purely supported by donations from audience members like you. I know that this sounds like an NPR ad or patreon.com/demystify.
Chinese people, why? What is failing in the present sense? Because the idea that these firms are profiting and growing and the stock market's climbing and the GDP is on track doesn't seem to work. That's the claim. And the reason for that is that it doesn't, these benefits of the firms don't actually trickle down to the laborers. Is that correct?
But that's working. Yes, that's working for it. If you're a stockholder and a billionaire, if you're one of the 1%, it's working just fine. The question is, who is the economy going to be run for, the 1% or the 99%? You could say the economy is working just fine for the 1%, which is why it's so bizarre to hear President Biden's team come out last week and say, we're going to win the election next year on Bidenomics of reindustrializing the economy. How on earth are you going to reindustrialize the economy if you have rents and Obamacare and monopoly prices and all of the your credit card rates? Can't be done.
I mean, I think that there's also something else, which is that people want to become part of this rentier class. Right, because it's a satisfying thing to be able to have a property that pays for itself and then pays for you to be able to live, and you don't have to deal with the factory floor, with a manager, with all of these different things that make it difficult or sometimes undignified to live, right? The idea that somebody's stuck in a really unpleasant work situation is part and parcel of the myth of work that we tell, right? So if you have to go work for somebody else, it takes away some of your freedoms inherently. And so the dream, and you see this all the time, people constantly sell courses for this on the internet, you know, how to become self-employed, how to generate a passive income where you figure out how to set something up and it just runs in the background and you're able to take all of the profits and party. And it's hard to fault people for wanting that because working is hard.
Unless you love your work, right? I feel like most people, I mean myself included, for most of my life, I was working a job I didn't really want to be working. And it's very, very difficult to align what you want to be doing with your work for most people because the paths that are laid out for them when they're young aren't appealing. People aren't able to find an alignment between their passions and their labor.
But this is actually, this is really interesting. I'm reading a book right now about the life and death of the Great Lakes. It's by Dan Egan. It's really interesting. He talks about the ecological crisis that occurred as a consequence of the St. Lawrence Seaway and bringing ocean-going vessels into the Great Lakes. And one of the things that he talks about, which is kind of peripheral to the main story, is the job of a wildlife biologist in the fisheries department. And when you go into biology and you study biology, there's this idea that what you're going to be doing is you're going to be studying life and you're going to be able to understand something fundamental about nature. And in reality, what it is that you go work for the wildlife department and your just working at the fish hatchery, or you're doing this endless drudgery of creating a recreational environment for people to be able to fish coho salmon on the Great Lakes. And so the desire is not aligned with the reality of what you must end up doing.
All right, so we're running out of time, and we're going to give you one last opportunity to ask a question or make a comment before we go, all right? We've only got about 4 minutes of broadcast time. We can do that. So if you would like to ask a question or make a comment concerning our topic of today, please do so now, all right? Perhaps this content that we're bringing you is you don't find it interesting, you know, but I would think that particularly for our community, it would be interesting. And so 972-467, state your name, where you're calling from, please.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Ishmael Fahmy from Dallas, Texas.
Assalamu alaikum.
And no, this is very interesting. I got so much to say. I'm just able to listen right now. And just one quick thing I want to say is that, you know, we have a GDP, but the United States doesn't actually have a product. That's what they were talking about, and that entails so much. That entails so much, and I wish I had time to really talk about it, but no, keep doing this. This is needed. Thank you. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam. Yeah, this is why the Chinese are outstripping us, is because we don't produce anything anymore. We shipped all of our labor overseas because we don't have to pay them what we pay have to pay American workers. And so since we're not producing anything, we get everything from China. A lot of those things are inferior products, you know, the dog food, the pet food that was killing our pets, etc. You know, and we just want to import everything, like Dr. Hudson was saying. And then, you know, Trump came in and started to get a tariff war, which didn't work out well for us, you know, putting tariffs on the Chinese products that were coming in, which was costing the consumer more to purchase it. You see? So it just made our prices go up. So we have to begin to think about these things in micro as well as macro economic terms.
Right. I just want to say,
Finish your thought.
Real quick, they don't talk about economic theory, because once you realize what economic theory was, is that in order to have an economy, you have to have products. That's the baseline that they don't want to teach anybody anymore, because anybody with half a sense would be like, well, where's our product? You know? So I just want to add that. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, about 25 years ago or 30 years ago, we became what they call a service economy, you know, as opposed to products, you know. We became a service economy. And, you know, we were concentrated very heavily in services, you know. So that's why we get everything from China now. China and other countries, India. You know, everything is made in China. When we were coming up, when I was coming up, when something was made, if it had a label saying made in Japan, we used to laugh about that. We would ridicule that, you know. But nobody laughing now. Nobody laughing about it now. So we need to reindustrialize. We have to make some products, but it's so expensive for us to live. Can you imagine $4,500 a month at the rent in New York? That's insanity. And so that means that they're making the city into a place just for the rich. You know, I'm going to try to bring this brother in, 240-615. You got about 30 seconds.
No, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Alhamdulillah, this is Sister Karam Muhammad from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I'm glad you made that statement, brother, because I was going to say what is the number one investment is real estate. And why? Because it provides food, clothing, and shelter. If we have our own, we could provide this because we make it ourselves. So that's the main thing, is that we have to invest in real estate. That's the number one tool, is to survive if you have your own, alhamdulillah. And that's what one of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he said that too, alhamdulillah.
Thank you for that. Okay, Shukran. Okay, so we're at the end of the show. We thank you for listening to New Day for Al-Islam in America, American Muslim 360 edition, number one Islamic radio station in the nation. And we pray that you have a blessed Juma tomorrow and that you and your family continue to be safe and secure. And until next time, assalamu alaikum.
Thank you.